Now let's go to the theater on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Dee Canfield writes both for and about the theater. Garrison Keillor writes and talks about the Writer's Almanac, all on Scribble. Well, Dee, I guess you've done just about everything with the theater. You have acted, you have written plays, and you've reviewed plays.
That's right.
When are you going to open your own theater?
I've not done much technical work, as you will note.
Ah.
So I have worked backstage a little bit, but yeah, most of my work has been on the stage or on the typewriter.
Well, that's impressive. I mean, you write all kinds of things, don't you?
Yes, I mostly write memoir, and I'm really kind of a closet writer. All of my writing is literally stacked in a closet upstairs in my house, and one of these days I'm going to pull it out and create something. I'm not very good at getting things published. I write mostly for myself, but yes, I write memoir. And I write short fiction, and every morning I spend about an hour in contemplative prayer, and I journal about that, trying to capture that experience. I journal my dreams. I write a blog every time I travel overseas, and I've written some plays.
And you also procrastinate, because I've seen you many times up at Pool Beans thinking about writing with all your paraphernalia laid out in front of you, just desperate for somebody to come along like me to talk
to. That's right. That's
right. I'm going to start tomorrow. But you apparently have started a lot, because you have written a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff.
Well, she's a person after your own heart. You're always harping on people to write.
She is doing it, all of it, everything from poetry to theater. We're here specifically to talk about your theater writing, because that's the one that I watched you kind of get interested in and do.
Mm-hmm.
What is so attractive about the theater?
Well, It's an art form unlike anything else. It's a communal experience. It's a shared experience. And I came to it as an actor with Don in, 1974 was my first summer on
really?
The Ginny Stitz Guild stage. Yes, doing Greek tragedy. And so it just sort of seemed to be a natural. Actually, I didn't even think about writing a piece for the theater. It was Sally Ann McCarthy. Several years ago, when she was affiliated with the Sisters of St. Francis up in Mount St. Clair College,
mm-hmm.
and they were having a significant anniversary. This was St. Clair, who was a contemporary of St. Francis, and it was an anniversary of St. Clair's birth. It was an anniversary of the Sisters of St. Francis. She asked me one year, she said, next year we're going to have a big celebration in the community, and I want you to write a one-woman play about St. Clair. I never did it. About 1 month before the production was to go on, she had apparently tried to get somebody else to do something, and it didn't work out. She called me, and she said, Dee, you're going to write this play. So I had 1 month to research St. Clair. I knew really nothing about her. Of course, many people have heard of St. Francis of Assisi. She was a contemporary of his. So I had 1 month to research, 1 month to write, and learn my lines. And that was an incredibly intense experience. It was kind of a baptism by fire, but I did it all in 1 month, and we produced the play. It was about an hour long. Had about 500 people in the audience, including the nuns of the convent who were there. So that was an incredible experience. Actually, she had me come up to the convent a few days before the play was to be produced. I lived in the convent, and those nuns accepted me as one of their own. And I remember counting down the hours. I have 72 hours to learn this play. 71 hours. I mean, I was counting down the hours. And I remember there was a big soccer field up at the top of the hill, and it was very warm. It was the end of September, getting close to St. Francis, the Feast of St. Francis, which is, what, October 6th. And I just remember walking in circles all day long up on that soccer field and learning my lines.
That sounds like people at the Genesius Guild.
Well, and you know, this baptism by fire, I mean, I came to it, you know, naturally, having been on the stage in Genesius Guild, because that's the way you did things, Don. And so it worked.
So when you write a play, do you become the character, or are you writing describing the character from
outside? For this play, I was to enact Saint Clare's life.
But in the writing, do you think, you start trying to think like she may have thought, or...
Well, I had a month, you know, to research and to write. Right. So I kind of did a bare bones story, but it worked. And I'll tell you a dream I had in the convent. It was an incredible experience. I mean, it was very intense. But, you know, sometimes when you enter into a creative process, something kind of takes over and carries you through. And that is the way I felt about this play. It's sort of like it just kind of wrote itself through me. But I was just petrified. And I remember going to bed and falling asleep, and I had this most incredible dream. You know, St. Clare is the patron saint of communications. I never knew that before. And, of course, our dreams, we get messages, you know, in all different ways. But in this dream, I was with Dustin Hoffman and Al Pacino. And Al Pacino was sitting right next to me. I could feel his arm against my arm. And they said, "Dee, we understand you are terrified, but we have been where you are now, and we're going to walk you through this, and you're going to be just fine." And for months afterwards, I am not making this up, for months afterwards, I could feel Al Pacino's arm. I could have the sensation of that arm against mine. And that got me through.
But you can't always do one-woman shows.
No.
You're going to write about other characters.
That's right.
And how do you select a topic?
Well, my first play, my next play was about a five-character play, and I had written a novella which was loosely based on my experience as a young woman. And one of the characters in the play was so, in the novella, was so one-dimensional. And I just wanted to somehow make him come to life. And so I went to Chicago Dramatists for about 6 or 8 weeks. I took the train, you know, from Princeton and went downtown Chicago and worked with them to begin to learn how to write a play. And so I wrote that play to try to flesh out a character to make my novella more realistic in terms of character. So what was your question?
How do you find when you're writing, you can't just write about yourself, you have to write about different characters. And how do you find the stories, and how do you pick the characters, and how do you make them come to life?
Well, as I said, that play, the second play, was based loosely upon my life. And, of course, you take components of what has happened. I take components of what has happened to me. It's the emotional realism that I am trying to portray, not necessarily getting everything according to the facts. And that was also the case in my most recent play called The Return. That was produced about 2 or 3 years ago at a Village Theater. Chris Jansen, mm-hmm. every once in a while, has new playwrights to put on their shows. And that play was based upon my, it was about a young woman who was in search for more information about her father and trying to make a connection with her father. And that was really based upon my life. My father was a stranger to me. I was born in England after the war. He had come to England as a soldier. And my mother and I came after the war, and I saw him for the first time when I was three. And then he was hospitalized for almost all of my life until I was 18. And I really never knew my father. And so this play was part of some of family history that I had heard, but I just made up characters to kind of bring my story to life in a way. My desire when I write is to really make an emotional connection with people and to really express what I'm feeling and to try to create that emotional reality on the stage.
Do you ever get the feeling that once you create a character, that character is trying to get a life of his or her own and taking you over and saying,
"Yes,
Dee, come on."
Yes, the quote bad guy in my play about my father was a character in the play was my father's brother. And he was really the antagonist. And it turned out that he was the most interesting character in the play. And it's like, okay, I think I wrote this play about the wrong person. So I really think I need to go back and rewrite it because he was going to be just kind of a vehicle for, you know, for all these other things to happen. And he really did steal the show literally on the stage and in the writing.
Well, to me, that's a good sign because it means the characters are alive and not just people you're contriving to get across a message, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that seems to me the best kind of literature is when...
And when you're really in the vein, the character takes over. You hear that all the time, that you hear writers say, particularly dramatists, that this character grew under my hand and I didn't realize it. You know, it just suddenly this character...
Yes.
Came to life.
Well, that
yes.
clearly happened to Huck Finn. I mean, Twain was set out to write because Tom Sawyer was so successful, to write a sequel, where they do more fun and games. And all of a sudden, Huck takes the book away from Twain and doesn't give it back till the last third of the book.
But does it have to be something personal to spark your interest in writing a play?
You know, it has been for me, and I think everybody writes for a different reason, and I think my main motivation for writing is to really try to understand myself. I know this is not an original idea with me, but when I put down my thoughts on paper, it really helps me to understand, you know, subconscious motivations and why did I do this when I was younger and really trying to understand myself. And so that's where my writing comes from. But certainly, you could take an item from the newspaper, you know, from, the national political situation. I mean, people take characters from everywhere. I mean, historical plays. So certainly, no, it does not have to be related. But that seems to be what motivates me right now.
Before we run out of time, you are also a poet. Can you read us some of your poetry, one of your poems?
I am a learner.
Well, isn't everyone?
Everybody is.
I have a couple of poems, and so if the first one is not to your liking, maybe the second one might be.
Well, we'll see if we can crowd them both in. Go ahead.
Okay. This I wrote after a heartbreak a couple of years ago. No hope. If you are in despair, then give up hope so you can really live. For hope is a demon that has eaten your days and left you in hunger. Loss of love or what you hoped would be is not what you want, I know. But let it be just like pain. Do you know your heart is suffering, suffering alone? Sit with it as if with a friendly book by a cozy fire and let it read to you. Your heart deserves this much. Notice you are still breathing. Notice, your life has not been taken as it is taken when you ignore the pain. Do not long to be relieved. Relief will come when you can stay your ground. And nothing is harmed, and your heart is thankful, for it is a living thing that gives you fire, and in this fire you find your life.
Very nice.
Ooh, it is.
Read the next one, too.
The next one is, I'll give you a little bit of background. My great-grandfather was from the island of Jersey, just off the coast of France, and on June 6, 2011, I crossed the English Channel to try to find more about my family history. And then, of course, on June 6, 1944, my father also crossed the English Channel. This is called Genealogy. On the gray, choppy waters of the English Channel, I crossed to the Jersey lighthouse that my great-grandfather would have seen, returning to Jersey from a sea voyage, sailing round the world as a cabin boy of nine. And my mother as a girl was at his funeral, so the obituary says, and he willed his feather bed to his daughter, my grandmother. And I slept under an eiderdown, satin-covered, that she gave to my mother when we left England for American shores. And my father, too, crossed the English Channel for the beaches of Normandy. He did not foresee his ocean voyage or war. One night in Illinois, crossing a farmer's field, a young man on a shortcut home, perhaps in swirling snow, hoping he hadn't missed supper, wanting warmth, being wanted. That is all.
Oh,
very nice, very personal.
You have a way of starting out here, and then all of a sudden, whoa.
Yeah, uh-huh.
We're going somewhere else. That's good.
Well, Dee, I don't think you need any encouragement from us, but keep writing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Don.
Obviously, it sounds like you are committed to writing. Something you said, you know, but you understand when you write. I'm like that when I talk. I tell people, and they think I'm kidding, I don't know what I'm thinking until I hear me say it. And you'll hear me say again, thank you, Dee, for coming over to visit with us. And also, we'd like to introduce our listeners once again to the very familiar Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information is at bloodcenter.org. You know, Dee is always worried that she's revealing too much of herself, you know, throwing too much of her personal life out. But
and yet the aim of much of her writing is to do that very thing.
That's right. Right? That's right. So it's nothing to be feared. But I remember I had her on Saturday Morning Live years ago. And we had a nice long conversation about what she was doing, teaching English as a second language and so on. And when the program was over, going out, she said, you know, that's the longest conversation we've ever had. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I've known her for so long,
right. And
we have not had a long conversation. And then that put me into an examination of conscience that I haven't had long conversations
right. With
the people I meet at
right. The
Guild. And when people ask me about them, I don't know anything about them other than that they
right. Were
in this play. And I count that as a serious character flaw. But, Dee is the one who woke me up to that.
She is one worth getting to know and full of such interesting depths. She didn't tell you because there wasn't time. She's off next week to Ireland for a week workshop in writing fiction.
Oh, yeah. She also didn't have a chance to plug a book that she says is very important to her, The Art and Craft of Playwriting by Jeffrey Hatcher, I think it is. That's a book she has relied on to help her structure plays. Have you ever thought of writing a play?
My first published work was a radio drama.
No kidding.
In eighth grade.
Okay.
Now wait.
I beat you.
You laugh.
In the sixth grade.
You laugh. I bored as I usually was with usually writing a paper, which I hated to write, I wrote a radio drama about the founding of our town, which turned Mountain Lake, Minnesota, which turned out to be fairly interesting. And particularly because I could use sound effects, horses galloping and, you know, axes chopping and stuff like that. So I wrote this thing, and it won first prize in the Gopher Historian Contest, which was a statewide contest for junior historians. And it was published in the Minnesota Journal of History.
You're a published playwright.
In the eighth grade, a published playwright.
My
yes.
goodness.
And I put it on at a local, a radio station 50 miles away, a town big enough to have a radio station, and I got to do the sound effects. So it's been put on. It's been published.
Yeah.
You're way
ahead of me.
It was awful. Imagine eighth grade, you know. You think you're so hot.
I don't know, Tweet. You know,
well, I'm not offering it to the Genesis Guild. Let me tell you that.
But you know, it's true. The impetus to write and to act out, I think, is very strong in young people.
It is. I mean, and a lot of them get it knocked out of them. But our grandkids have always.
Don't we knock everything out of kids? I mean, I think of children's voices, which are as versatile as they'll ever get when they're young, and we quiet them down as we go along. They are brimful of excitement and curiosity, and somehow that gets tamped down as they
go through. Well, the thing is that curiosity is so annoying. You know, when a baby tips the milk over to see if it'll pour onto the floor, it's doing a scientific experiment, right? No, and it's learning.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it any less annoying to go and have to mop it up. Or it throws things, or, you know. Kids are constantly experimenting. They're born scientists. They're born poets.
Yeah, it seems to me that the whole process of education ought to be stimulating curiosity and imagination. Those are the two things that are the sparkly part of our self-awareness. Imagination. If you have imagination and if you are curious, there's really nothing you can't do. Look at Einstein. It was imagination that gave him his theory of relativity.
Coleridge, imagination is a repetition in the finite mind of the eternal act of creation.
Why is it you have a quote for everything I mentioned?
Because I've taught for so many years, and I got this useless bag of quotes that I want to toss out at any given turn.
Is that the – someone said, contended that that was a weakness, that if you like quotes, you know, that you are – it shows a lack of imagination.
I have accused poets of that, of depending so much on someone else's words to get you going. And that I can see that might be a way of sort of copping out. I didn't say it. Emerson said it, right? Yeah. I didn't say it. Whitman said it.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I am enchanted by quotations. And I kind of collect them because a good quote will make you stop and think.
Yeah.
And you also... What I find is I'm, you know, envying the guy who, or a woman who had the imagination to think of it, to put words together in that particular way to get that idea across. But, you know, imagination. I'm waiting for you to write another play, pal.
It's going to be a long time.
Well, it's going to be a week before we come back to... Maybe I'll get him going and then we'll get you coming back for the next edition of Scribble.